All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Finding Burundi. I am Alan Daishimie. I am thrilled to talk to my guest today. If you are on Twitter or Burundian or East African, you've probably come across her tweets. Jodi Kayal Irakoze is my guest today. She is one of Africa's rising feminist voices, using the power of social media to reach thousands and thousands of people with the gospel of feminism. She describes herself as ungovernable. She refuses to shrink, and in fact, she does not want to be liked. Instead, she wants patriarchy to fear her. She's also very busy between running her organization, Choose Yourself, and her business. And so that's why I'm really excited that she could take time out of her busy schedule and speak with me today. Welcome to Finding Burundi, Jodi Kayal. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. I'm going to be honest, I was laughing with this intro.
Why were you laughing with this intro? Did I lie or did I say?
No, you didn't lie, but I was like, oh my God, I don't want to listen to this kind of person. You know, you made me sound as if I'm not horrible, but I can threaten people and I want to appear like someone who's kind, you know. Now, well, I'm about to cause trouble.
I feel like, as someone who's been following you on Twitter, I feel like you are okay with causing trouble and being loud. And so when I was doing research on who you are, I thought those things captured the essence of who you are, no?
They do, but I never get used to when someone else is describing me using those words. And maybe because I'm comfortable doing it, but when it's someone else, right. I'm like, oh, wait.
Well, if I knew you personally, I'd say other things that I know you about you. So I'd say that you're kind or giving or caring, but I don't know that. So that is why I chose to go with what I know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I want to get started and get right into it because I think we have a lot of things to talk about today.
Sure.
I want to start talking about your journey towards feminism. As I was preparing for this, I started thinking about Burundi, and like every society, it has its gender norms with an ideal set of attributes, if you will, about what makes a respectable man or woman. I know that for young Burundian women, the concept of bufasoni, and that is, you know, they're expected to have humility, confidentiality, they're supposed to be graceful and elegant, they're supposed to have pride, they're not supposed to be loud or act in a way that would bring shame to their family. That concept is ingrained in them from a very young age. And as you and I can agree, those are the things that are complete opposite of what feminism stands for. So I'm wondering, as someone who grew up with those sort of societal ideals in a Burundian household, how did you come to embrace feminism?
Oh, wow. That is a good question. And I think I've talked about it. I do talk about it most of the time. And leaving Burundi was the main key to me embracing feminism. Back in Burundi, I was actually very, very into women empowerment. But again, I didn't want to sound less respectable. So I would say women deserve to have a voice, but I would try to use the language that doesn't, you know, cause trouble. So I remember that now I do speak with my mom, and she will sometimes say, I don't recognize you. And that would be her way of saying, this is not how I raised you. You understand Burundian mothers, when they say I don't recognize you, they're just saying right. That's not how I raised you. So just like any Burundian woman, I was raised in a household where bufasoni is something every young woman should aspire to. And bufasoni, you know, would come in different aspects of life, would come in when guests are home, especially male guests, to make sure you're not seated with them, you know. When you have guests at home, make sure you are in the kitchen helping, or make sure that you don't look any way that society does not accept as a woman because you will cause shame to the family. So that's how I was raised. And I was raised with the concept of kuterura, you know, don't be loud. Don't be loud. Keep it to yourself. You can say about it, but make sure you are alone or in your family. Don't, you know, no. I don't know how my mom used to say it, but she used to say, Nukited amenyo yaba. Nukited amenyo yaba. Nukited amenyo yaba nutaji. There's a word she used, but she meant abantu utazi, which means people who don't know you. So that's how I grew up with the family where ubufasoni was something I should have. But mostly because in my family, we are mostly women. So I only have a brother and four sisters. So you understand how we were raised with only a brother and four sisters. So there was that gender inequality already, you know, loud. And we will see because our brother was being raised different from us, even with parents who were educated and should have understood that a boy and a girl are the same. But starting with my father giving his name to my brother and giving us our names, so you understand how our culture was so ingrained in me. So I guess leaving Burundi was my starting point of feminism. And I love to say that I discovered a life that doesn't center me. And by not centering me, it means I was given a chance to see a life that doesn't center my culture, a life that I'm actually non-existent as a culture or as an individual who have a culture that I should hold onto. So I got to meet different cultures. I got to meet different people. And I got to realize, oh, wow, I was so oppressed back in Burundi. You know, I was raised to shrink myself, to hold on to traditions that were really not helping me. So coming to feminism was really hard. Hard in terms that I had to unlearn a lot. It's like being born again. So it was It's still hard even today. It's still hard. I have to check myself constantly because I spend most of my life in Burundi. I am so Burundian. So finding a balance between a culture and ways of thinking that are oppressive to women and embracing freedom, it's a journey. So I'm still learning.
That's interesting. There's a few things you say there that are interesting that I want to just pick up on. One is that, you know, you grew up in a family of a lot of women. You have four sisters and a brother, and you could tell from that young age that your brother was treated differently because he was a boy. I'm wondering whether when you were younger and you saw that treatment that he got, did you feel that it was unfair, but you just didn't have the language for it? Or did you learn completely about feminism when you got to America?
Oh no, I knew it was unfair, but I didn't have the language. So I would see how he was treated as, you know, a precious child. And I would feel like honest. And I remember when I was 10, my grandfather was sick, and then there was this tension in my family because they had to do a celebration where he designs who's gonna, you know, inherit all he had. And then he had only two sons and then many daughters. So I remember my aunts were silent. None of them was into that. It was only my father and his brother. So I remember asking myself, like, where are your sisters? They should have a voice into this. But I was 10, so I couldn't find words to articulate it. And I also remember during that ceremony, they took my brother. So we went, all of us, up country, but we didn't, you know, take part of that. So all of that made me kind of angry, but also I didn't know how to articulate it. So I would have tons of questions, but I would not know how to ask. So I remember I tried to have such conversations with my dad, and my dad would then, you know, try to simplify the conversation by, you ask too much questions, or you are older than your age, things like that. So I grew up with that, and those are memories that come to me now and realize how they I have kept it somehow in my heart, those experiences. It is now that I relive them and I'm like, I have now the language to articulate how I felt, how I lived that, and I wish I knew how to say what I thought that time.
Right. And so when you look at it now, do you think, wow, I've always been a feminist?
Yes, I think I've always been a feminist, but again, feminism comes in two different sides. There is feminism that comes as a political, radical way of existing. Then there is a feminism that comes as just a survival way. So that's why when we talk about feminism, we add an S saying feminisms. So I think I've always been a feminist, but I didn't have the language. And I think every woman under patriarchy has really that longing of freedom because you see injustice and you want to be treated not as the second sex, but because of how we have different survival ways, or because of how we have accepted, that we should be the second sex because that's how God made us, or that's how the culture is, all the reasons that we use to justify all that, some women decide to be just full soldiers of patriarchy and say that's
Right.
how things are supposed to be.
Right. And so now, what was that like? So now you move to the States for school. You encounter the language that described the things that you were feeling when you were younger. What was that like, and how did that change the relationship? Or if it didn't change at all, you can also tell me, how did that change the relationship that you had with, your family in terms of speaking about these issues? Because I'm sure there are certain things that came up now, and now with you empowered with this language, I'm wondering whether that dynamic has changed. I don't know if my question is clear, but.
Coming to feminism, it was violent. And I call it violent because I found feminism, I was broken. So it was so violent to my transformation was violent because I was hurt and I wanted to heal and to find a space to give myself time to embrace everything that I was learning. But again, the world that we live in doesn't give you that space. So I will find that space in my own house, but whenever I will be out, I will start now being aware of how patriarchy is harming me. So, and I think every woman who have come across feminism language has gone through that phase, the moment where you start realizing, oh my God, that is how I'm having a relationship with my boyfriend. This is the gender dynamics that is going on. That's why we are fighting. Or that's why I'm dealing with this with my family. So you start, coming across a language that you should use, and it gets violent because you don't know how to bring that language to the people you are connected to. So that's a fight that came across. And it was harsh because when I started embracing feminism, I didn't realize that I should take it slow with my family. So I started being violent to them in the name of feminism. And
That's interesting. Can you tell me more about that? Because I mean, as you are saying this, I'm realizing that, as a man, it's not something that I think about in terms of, the interaction that I have with women in my life. But it sounds like you were noticing things in everyday life that, as you mentioned, were violent or had language for. And so how did that affect you in terms of your relationship with them? How did you turn into violence as well?
I mean, first, before I get into more details, the kind of violence I'm talking about is that I harmed them, but not in because I was I wanted to harm them, but because I thought I was protecting myself. So a simple example, I have been always fighting with my mom on how I dress. So before I come into feminism, she would always be the one to, you know, to tell me I have to dress well. And I was always adjusting and making her happy. Then I come to feminism, realizing my body is not about how I dress. And no one should have a say on that. So I have found our language. And instead of having a decent conversation with my mom, I'm out here ignoring her or blocking her. Or even telling her, you shouldn't tell me how I dress. So it becomes, and it took me time, to be honest. It became a struggle. And even people in my life, even a man I was dating at that time, it is now that I go back and say, oh, wow, I wish I had found a feminist sister to guide me, to tell me you need the time to breathe everything you just learned. And I just wish women who are listening to me, who are just coming to feminism, you deserve that space. Take your time. Don't just rush into the world with what you just learned. It's going to be horrible, because the first phase of feminism is being constantly angry.
Right.
And while I love what anger can do, anger can also be impure. So you have to be aware and have people to remind you. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. So now there's something interesting that you just said here, which I'm going to pick up on, which is, you realize that you had come across this language and this understanding of the world, but the people in your life hadn't gotten there yet. And in reaction to that new understanding, you were harming the people in your life because they didn't really understand what you were going through. Now, I see this on Twitter all the time where women are complaining that, we're not here to teach men how to be good or all these kind of things. I'm wondering whether you felt that you didn't have to teach the women in your life that were not empowered by the language that you had just come across.
There is a difference between I don't want to teach you, and there's a difference between, while I don't want to teach you, I'm not going to harm you. So I think it's my right to not do any label for you and say you can go and find out for yourself. But I don't think I harm you in that process. And I'm speaking on my personal level. And I personally wasn't even about I don't want to teach you. It was about, oh my God, I was harmed my entire life. I don't want you to harm me anymore. So my only way to do that, I'm going to be violent to you as well. So it became that. And I think when it comes to what we see on Twitter about teaching, we have the right to not teach you, but mostly because Twitter is full of information.
Right.
And even with all those informations that we put on Twitter, we still are being asked to do more intellectual labor. And we are always wondering, what's for? What's for? Why should I come on Twitter and spend hours arguing with someone who's not ready to listen? What about you go home and pick an article on the internet and just read?
Now, I guess my question was more like whether you felt that you are happy to do that labor for women who are still yet to encounter feminism in the way that you have versus men,
oh,
for example.
Yeah, I understand. Oh, to be honest, I was like, no, there is no way I'm gonna do that labor for women in my family. And you know why? Because that was the problem that was going on. I had just found feminism, and I was realizing how they harmed me my entire life. And I'm talking about aunts, my own mom. So I was like, there is no way I'm going to try to preach feminism to them. So it just became me protecting myself from them. And that was violent, because those were people in my life who wanted to be involved into my life. And also, I was blind to realize that everything they did, it wasn't because they hate me. You understand?
Right.
Even if they used they were using culture to keep me safe. They were using what they knew to keep me safe. They were using their own, what they have been taught about raising a young woman, you know. So it wasn't that they wanted to annoy me if they were asking me if I'm getting married all the time. It was just that all they knew, that I should get married. It wasn't that my own mother was trying to pick on me when she wanted me to dress well. It was because somehow she told that I don't want to hear people saying that my daughter is going around naked. So you understand, I wasn't aware of those dynamics, that I was just angry constantly, you know. I just found feminism, I'm angry, I don't want to deal with anybody.
Right. that makes sense. That makes complete sense. Now,
I think you saw that phase of me on Twitter. Like, I think anyone who knows me will say I went through that phase.
Right. Now, so one of the things that I talk to my wife about is a sort of like this generational gap. Of especially older African women. Like, I know for a fact that my mom is probably a feminist, but I don't think she would describe herself as one. I am wondering if there are any Burundian or African women that have influenced your feminism, whether now or prior to encountering feminism as you've encountered it in the last few years.
Yes. There is my favorite Burundian woman that she started with, Keti Nijalandi. And I remember reading about Keti when I was in Burundi, and I got to read something that she wrote because my mom happened to be a fan of hers. Then there is this story that I learned back in Burundi as well, but I got to read the story again, and it blew my mind once over. It's the story of the queen, Ana Suza, from Angola, and how she fought to keep her people together against Portuguese people. There is Mariam Sankara, the wife of Thomas Sankara. So there is a bunch of African feminists that inspired me. But now I've got to meet African feminists. That's the beauty of coming to feminism. Now that I interact with every day, and I'm blown, because Africa has a very amazing future, because these women will save the continent.
Right. So you talk about Keti, she's amazing, as well as other women as well. That's awesome. Now, I started following you on Twitter around, I think, 2015. And I think you mentioned this earlier as well, that you were always about gender equality. And I think your tweets reflected that. I remember one of the first few things I saw was with your online store, that, you know, a percentage of your profits went towards women initiatives. But what I've seen change in the last few years is the language that you use, in terms of, you know, you used to be about, you know, women empowerment and that sort of lingo that's used by international NGOs. Recently, I've seen a shift where you now identify as a radical feminist. I'm wondering, one, what's the difference? And two, how did you go from a regular feminist, so to speak, to a radical one?
Good question. So I was a woman empowerment feminist, and now I have become a radical feminist.
A Beyonce.
Yeah, I was a Beyonce. I was a pick me. You have seen that language. Angela Davis is the reason. I read a book of Angela Davis, and the book had a quote that changed my life. It said, being radical is grasping things from the root. Then I realized that we have been talking about gender equality, women empowerment, without talking about the elephant in the room, without talking about the root of it all, which is patriarchy. So women empowerment, gender equality are propaganda of patriarchy, because patriarchy knows it's
exploitation of women. They know, but because they want to keep us, you know, busy, they brought us gender equality propaganda. They brought us women empowerment. So they brought us all that language that doesn't really address what needs to be addressed. That, and those are institutions, those are systematic power, there are culture, religion. So me embracing radicalism in feminism was my way of realizing I need to go back to the roots of it, or I need to address patriarchy. And that change has been quite hard in terms of there are people who liked my woman empowerment. Then when I become a radical, it becomes another whole individual. And those are even people in my family.
Wait, are you less marketable now? Are you less marketable now that you are a radical feminist?
I don't know, because even I being radical, I've been able to do quite some stuff. But again, I'm always fighting being, embracing respectability politics. I'm always fighting being less loud. I'm always told to really tone my voice or try to be less angry. But that has never been the issue. I think the issue is now that my politics as feminism comes as, you know, as clear, we need to address patriarchy. We need to talk on how we are going to address institutions. We need to talk on how we can have 60% of women in parliament and none of them are voting maternal leave. So we need to talk on how we can have classed women in power, but none of them are really talking about teen pregnancies. So that's where I am right now. And I love it because I feel like I'm doing needed work, I guess.
Right. Okay. So you brought up a few things that touch upon, Burundi and maybe East Africa a little bit. And I want to talk about Burundi for a quick second, because for me, one of the things that I didn't grow up in Burundi and I've read quite a fair amount of books on Burundi. And one of the things that that I kept encountering was an average description of a Burundi on a hill, of a Burundian family. The woman was always described as, you know, hardworking, always out kurima, and the guy always at the bar. I saw that, you know, several times, which for me told me that the woman was the center of the economic life of a Burundian family, so to speak, right? And so I'm wondering, how does radical feminism intersect with a Burundian woman, an average Burundian woman, for lack of a better word? Like, because I understand all of that radical feminism, I buy into it, I'm into it. I'm just wondering, in a Burundian context, how does that manifest itself?
I think first we should understand that when we talk about Burundian women, we should talk about different type of Burundian women. And by that, I mean, we cannot put all of them in one box. That would be unfair. In terms of Burundian women who are educated, have another different kind of life as a Burundian woman who is uneducated, a Burundian woman who lives in rural areas. And I'm talking about that because when you go to rural areas of Burundi, the woman is the one who wake up all every day and she goes, you know, to farm and work in. And while the men, basically what men do when you go in rural areas is either go to see how the woman is working or go sit with other men and just drink. Then you come to classed women, and these are women who are working and the man is working. Then there is that gender inequality power that comes, that the woman still goes home and gets involved with the kids while the man after work goes to drink with the other men. So it's still the same kind of story, Which brings us to what Burundian culture has been. Burundian culture has been all about men acquiring power through owning things, but the women being the ones that are actually doing the work. Which means a man will own the land, but the woman will be the one taking care of the land. But the man will be
Interesting.
the one, yeah, the man will be the one getting, at the end of the day, getting all the things that come from that land. And then when you go to classed families, there will be that the woman is also working, bringing something at the table, but also raising the kids in everyday work, which means she's involved at every level of the kids at school, everything. So this brings the what radical feminism, what to accomplish. Radical feminism puts all of this on the table and ask ourselves, how come we have a generation, or how come we have a society where two people who are working toward having a life together are not putting same equal of emotional label? What is gender equity? Gender equity at the end of the day is making sure that no one is oppressed.
All right, everyone, that is part one of my conversation with Judy Kaya. We continue this conversation next week, so please look out for the second part of this conversation. I should be putting it out next week. In the meantime, you can check out Judy Kaya on Twitter at Judy Kaya Irakoze, and she is raising money to build a school for refugees in Naki Valley refugee camp in Uganda. And if you'd like to support that project, check out her website for the organization that she leads, chooseyourself.website. You can also check them out on Twitter at chooseyourself2. So that's choose yourself and to the number. Thank you again, Judikael Irakoze, for joining me on the podcast. I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.